Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Atlantic Bushcraft Adventures. Tonight we are on episode 187, and we thought we would chat a little bit about the science of firewood. And for some of you out there, this might be some common sense stuff, but for a lot of people, and especially, I don't want to say new to the woods, but new to the woods as well, but people that are just getting their feet under them in the woods, this is one of those areas where a little bit of knowledge can go a long way and really save you a lot of trouble. I know people that are consider themselves like avid campers, and you'll watch them try and make a fire, and you're just kind of like, you need a hand? Like, you good? No, I do this all the time. And you're just trying to bite your tongue, and that's kind of where this comes from, you know what I mean? So people that actually know wood, like I said, might be a little bit of common sense to you, but if you don't really know wood, there's a lot of good information that you can take from just a little bit of knowledge. And it's not hard, you know what I mean? It's not hard stuff to learn. You don't have to know every single tree out there. You don't have to be able to identify like a juniper from a larch or something like that, but you can kind of figure some basic things out and what to look for in wood. And it's going to help you a lot when you start harvesting your firewood, when you start making your firelays, and when you start preparing that wood to burn. Does that make sense, Ben, or am I just kind of going off the deep end here?
No, I think you're on the right track. So you're 100% right. And you have a few topics we're going to have to cover here to cover this properly. And one of it is just having the wood in the right format. And by that, I mean it needs to be dry. If it's still dripping wet, it's not going to burn very well. It needs to have more surface area. But the type of wood and how to collect it, I think, is the first thing we'll want to talk on. And we'll talk about a few terms that everyone kind of says, but what does that really mean? And is there a gray area between? And I think we're both going to agree that not all hardwoods are equal, and not all softwoods are equal. And there are woods that sort of fit in that zone where they are technically a hardwood, but they kind of act more like a softwood and vice versa. So we can identify a few of those and sort of help people understand why we say that they do this, even though they're still technically a hardwood or a softwood.
No, I think that's a great place to start. So right out of the gate, when we say hardwood versus softwood, for anybody that doesn't know, I mean, and no judgment, don't get me wrong, you don't know what you don't know. Hardwoods or deciduous and softwoods or evergreens, they're kind of your two big branches when it comes to wood in general. Softwoods are going to be like your needle-bearing trees. The other big factors that are come with softwoods is they generally have quite a bit of sap or balsam to them. You know what I mean? Like they're the ones, technically, if you're walking along the woods and you stick your hand on a tree and it gets sticky, chances are it was a softwood. But another big thing that comes with that sap and stuff is a lot of it is flammable. So softwoods, they can't be rotten, but they don't necessarily have to be as dry or dry at all like the majority of hardwoods would have to be. And that's a good thing to know about softwoods right there.
Yes. Yeah. And then your hardwoods are your broadleaf trees. And so if you have a big flat leaf, you're generally looking at a hardwood as opposed to the needles. Hardwoods in general are slower growing, in my opinion, than a softwood. But again, these are generalities, and there is definitely exceptions in both cases, right? So we have hardwoods that grow relatively fast, and we have softwoods that do grow relatively slow.
No, I was just going to say, and keep in mind, from Ben and I's reference, this is going to be mostly North American trees, because it just went through my mind. Like, you can get bamboo. You can get bamboo that will grow as tall as a tree, but do you consider it a hardwood, softwood? Is it a plant, tree? I mean, we're going to speak about what we know, which is North America stuff. If anybody wants to weigh in on those other things and add some comments and stuff to this video on YouTube or our podcast, that'd be super appreciated, because we just don't have access to that.
Interestingly, I do know this answer. A bamboo is technically a grass.
See, there you go. That's something I did not know.
Yeah, bamboos can grow up to 40 centimeters a day, I think, at their peak growth. Like, you can watch a bamboo grow.
Yeah, I was going to say, the only reason I know this and diving down a different rabbit hole, I remember it from Mythbusters, when they seen if you could put bamboo under somebody and torture them by growing it or something, and they're like, yeah, actually, this is plausible.
Yeah. So, I mean, bamboo is its own thing, but obviously not a common thing here, and even trees that are somewhat similar are generally more of a plant. It's a hollow hollow trunk as opposed to solid trunks, which is what we're doing talking about. Most trees have a solid trunk and last multiple years, where bamboo, I think, dies off if it gets too cold and just regrows. But there are whole bamboo forests and stuff. That's a whole topic that we could have a lot of fun with. But
yeah, so our neck of the woods, softwoods, hardwoods, and there's some common ones that you'll find throughout most of North America and definitely Canada. Once again, if anybody doesn't know, Ben and I are from Canada, funny enough. So that is going to be our area of expertise.
Yeah. And both of us are originally from, you know, Atlantic Canada. And so we're used to that environment. There will be exceptions as you get out, and there will be trees that just aren't common to us. There are definitely trees that we may have seen one or two, where in other areas that might be the prevalent tree, right? So do take the time to learn about the individual trees in your area and the different, you know, environmental effects of those trees. If you have a longer growing season, those trees may act slightly different as opposed to a short growing season. If you're in a boggy area than a dry area, you may have a similar tree that has slight adaptations to it. If that makes any sense. And that is getting into something that's a bit different.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, general rule, when you're getting firewood, is you look for stuff that's dead.
Yep. Yeah, and I guess, so we've clarified what hardwood versus softwood is. And the advantage of softwood, like I said, is that it does have some balsam and resins. That's the word I was looking for, some resins inside it. Things like pine, you can get what they call fatwood. Which is generally a pine that has a damage on it or something like that. The sap and stuff is going to collect in that area to try and heal the tree. It smells kind of like turpentine, but it's also flammable. And that's how you get the fat wood. The wood just gets saturated and stuff like that. But that could be another discussion talking about fat wood in general. But let's just talk about the wood and what to look for. So when you go into your location, where you're going to camp could kind of tell you a little bit about the trees or the firewood you're going to find in that area. If you're going into a swampish area, it's going to be a little bit more damper, stuff like that. You're going to have a lot more probability for softwood trees. Softwood tends to like water a lot more. It grows in boggier areas or damper areas, however you want to see it. A lot of peat moss and things like that. You're going to get those softwood trees. Generally with harder grounds, rockier grounds, you'll get more hardwood trees. And this isn't like 100%. Definitive, but generally the majority of the trees that are going to be in there, that's the kind of beauty of wood, is it's very diverse. You know what I mean? Like, it's nothing to be in a black spruce bog and you'll find like just this random hardwood growing in the middle of it.
The thing to keep in mind is, yes, soil type and environment has a huge effect, but there's also a natural progression in evergreens, where they do tend to sprout a little quicker, a little, you know, they can oftentimes take hold in areas that other trees won't. So if you take, say, like a burned over area and you show up a while later, you'll usually end up with, like, say, a lot of blueberries and low brush. And in that, you'll then generally see, you know, evergreens show up. So a lot of spruces and pines and balsa fir and stuff like that. Later, when a hardwood trees take foot, they will grow taller then, and then they'll sort of block the light to the evergreens. They'll tend to die out and it'll become an evergreen, a hardwood forest, if the environment's good enough for the hardwoods to sort of take over. Softwoods tend to be a little bit more durable in for harsher weather. If you go to tundra, colder areas, that's where you're going to find these evergreens, because they don't have to completely regrow their leaves every year. They can maintain those things, and that sort of saves them. They can start growing earlier in the year, and they can actually grow later. They don't have to lose their leaves and sort of go into a hibernation state in the same effect.
An interesting fact about softwoods, once again, taking from experience here at Atlantic Canada, where you said they don't lose their needles year-round. Something to keep in mind is if you were camping out in the springtime, in our area over here, Atlantic Canada, it's generally like the end of May to the end of June, somewhere in there. There's a thing that's called spring green up. or green up in general. And what happens is softwood trees, they'll generally take all the moisture out of the trunk and the larger limbs and stuff like that, and they'll put it towards the ends of their branches to go towards new needle growth. As a bushcrafter or somebody that's out there camping, this is something to keep in mind, because during those times, it's real easy to basically, like, if you got into a survival situation or something like that, you can pretty much lop down a live tree and it's going to burn for you pretty good, because a lot of the moisture is already pulled out of the trunk and being dispersed out to those needles, like I said, for the new growth. So the inside tends to be a little drier. All that's left in there is kind of concentrated resins. Real easy to split that stuff up into small, you know, pencil-sized firewood and get a fire going pretty readily with it.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I want to see pine. If you're in a pine forest, you'll see that there's a lot of pine needles on the ground. So they do have a cyclic. They do sort of drop their needles more so than other evergreens. And I think Japanese larch, that's kind of an odd one. And that's one of the ones I would say it sort of bridges the gap between the two, the hardwood to softwood.
Yeah, it's kind of another one that falls into that category for anybody that's familiar with it would be like a hemlock. A hemlock kind of has a broad, not really leaf, but branch set. It almost looks like a leaf. It's another one of those funky woods. Burns well, still has a little bit of resin to it, but not sticky resin like a true softwood, but not really a clear sap like a true hardwood. It's another interesting tree. Not super common. Well, yeah, they are fairly common in Nova Scotia, but we kind of got groves of them. They just don't grow everywhere here. You'll get patches.
I think what Nova Scotia calls hemlock, Newfoundland always called juniper, and I think the true name for it is Japanese larch.
Well, no, maybe so. But once again, Nova Scotia, we have a hemlock and then we do have a juniper. So a hemlock, like I said, it's got a broad leaf. What we call juniper here, it almost kind of looks like a messed up white pine. They don't quite got the long, dangly branches on them, but they'll have like the long needles that grow in 3 to 5 group clusters, and they stay pretty close to the trunk. I'll try and send you a picture afterwards. But and it could be, like, you're going to hear me mention popple later on in this episode, and that's actually called trembling aspen. So this is one of those things that if you hear us mention a tree or something that you don't quite know the name to, or it doesn't register with you, you're like, I don't know what they're talking about. Might be worth shooting us a message, because it could be a local term. In Nova Scotia, you probably won't get anybody call a trembling aspen. They're going to all call it popple or poplar. And that's just kind of something to this area. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm going to send you a quick picture.
Coming through Facebook?
Yeah.
But, so yeah, there is, yeah, that looks like juniper.
So, yeah, this is what we call juniper too. And it's not technically juniper. Again, it's technically a larch. And the way I always describe it is like the branch has a little tiny barrel and a whole bunch of needles come out of it.
Yeah.
And and it has a rough bark, and it is definitely some kind of evergreen. But the needles are much softer, and they sort of do not survive the winter as kind of as well. And they grow really well in acidic, wet, damp areas, so bogs and marshes and in the edge. But they produce a ton of heat when you burn them. I've watched people warp stoves burning juniper. It burns hot. It burns relatively long for a tree. So if you're looking for firewood, it's actually not a bad choice. Just be really careful what you do with it, because it does produce an intense heat. That's usually more associated with hardwoods.
Sorry, I was just looking up a thing of hemlock here, because they do kind of have a unique look to them as well. But anyway, I can do that some other point. So another good one that, if you can get it dry, will produce an amazing amount of heat is applewood or alder. And I know alder, if you can get those suckers burning, they will literally put out heat that is just unbelievably hot.
Yeah. Now Alder has that. Alder's an interesting tree. I figured you were going to do more of the talking on this, and I'm buddying. Alder is really interesting because it's a fast growing hardwood, like a really fast growing. You can almost impossible to kill. Cut a branch, thing grows back in days. It seems like. But it never grows super big around in this area, although I've seen in the south where people have them like 8, 9, 10 inches across. Up here, 3, 4 inch diameter is a pretty big alder.
Yeah, for sure. And like I said, it takes forever to dry. But once you get it dry, it's nice and dry. Or, sorry, nice and hot.
Yeah. It's another one I've seen warp and destroy soaks. People threw it in. But that's because it's naturally small and has a lot of heat, so it gets a lot of surface area, and it really burns hot. It's also been known to be a really good one for smoking food.
I could see that, because it does give off quite a bit of smoke itself. Anyway, we kind of jumped around a little bit there. Getting back more on topic to where I... Well, not on topic. Back to the flow I was trying to go through for here. Softwood, hardwood, softwoods, we all went over that. Some common softwoods that most people can find in North America. The most common one people should be able to identify is going to be fir trees. The classic Christmas tree has a very distinct smell to it. If you rub the needles, it's going to smell like a fir tree. It's pretty easy to pick out. It does have quite a bit of balsam and sap to it. It will ignite somewhat, but fir will generally burn, like I said, it can basically be 50% wet and it'll still burn pretty much fine. So it's a good one to pick out in the springs and stuff like that too. The other common ones that you're going to get that are pretty easy to identify is going to be red and white pine in our areas, simply because they got the traditional long needle on them. And if it's clusters of three, it's red. And if it's clusters of five, it's white. There are other pines and there's different ways to tell them apart, but those are two real easy ones because most people can identify the long dangly pine needles. You know what I mean? And then it's just figuring out if they're in clumps of three or five. And then, you know, the word red has three letters. The word white has five letters. Red, white pine. Yeah, that's actually a neat way I like to teach kids about how to identify some of the trees out there. But if you can remember those three big ones for softwoods, you pretty much got yourself set. Other common ones are going to be like yellow spruce, black spruce, and things like that. They're floating around here, but it's a little bit more to identifying those. But those three there, pretty easy to identify. One by smell, because most people do know that classic smell of a Christmas tree. You get the candles and stuff like that always around Christmas, which is just around the corner. So if you've never smelled pine tree, go get yourself a pine scented candle and you'll figure it out. Fir tree Christmas candle. Yep. Pine's and also another classic scent. It's also a good one because you can make pine needle tea. It does have some vitamin C and stuff like that in it, so it has some medicinal uses as well as the firewood uses. But those are the three ones I like to easily identify with people that I'm taking out into the woods, because they are very simple to identify. And they're all good softwoods that are going to burn fairly readily even when they're wet. The other big thing with softwood is, by its name, it is softer wood. It's easier to cut with a handsaw, it's easier to cut with a power saw, whatever you have. It's easier to split, generally, if you're not into, like, twisty, knotty wood. But pound for pound, it's generally easier to split up into kindling and stuff like that. I love using softwood split up as my initial kindling. It burns really quick, gives a fair bit of heat, generally will smoke quite a bit, and it's the classic crackling wood. You know what I mean? You throw a piece of softwood on, regardless if it's dry or wet or whatever, it's going to snap and cause a lot of embers and sparks and stuff like that. And some people love that for their fires. You know what I mean? So if you want like one of those snappy, crackly fires that have the little embers going up, softwood's a good place to go. That's also something to be readily aware of if your tent is just downwind of your fire and you're burning softwood. Once again, I know more than one person that has made a fire, got themselves a whole bunch of softwood, thought they had the world, right by the heels, and ended up putting tons of holes in their tent and tarps.
It's pine is also probably one of your best carving woods that's locally available. If you want to do simple things like a spoon or whatever, you can usually pretty wick one out pretty quick. If you're making a fire and you need to, you want a small tool, utensil, pine is a pretty good option. Although, in my opinion, pine makes really poor tents for pegs.
Yeah. Well, where it's softer wood, it tends to be more brittle or brake easier. So anything under load, it's not going to be as good. Though, you know, I've used it plenty too for different applications. You just got to be aware of it. Don't expect a piece the size of your little finger to hold a whole lot of weight. As where if you had a piece of maple the size of the little finger, it's probably going to hold significantly more weight. And I guess... Oops, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, my favorite hardwood for like tent pegs is alders.
Yeah, because alders are readily available. We generally camp around water. Alders love water or damp areas, and off you go. And seeing we're going down that path already, and we're already 20 minutes into our episode, let's start talking a little bit about hardwoods. Because we have talked quite a bit about softwoods. Hardwoods, as Ben said, leafy trees. Generally, they lose their leaves in the fall. They regrow them in the spring. So during the winters and stuff like that, the branches tend to dry out a little bit. They'd still go through a green up phase in the spring as well, where they take a lot of moisture in through the, like, between the outer layer of wood and inner layer of bark. A lot of the nutrients and stuff are transferred through there. It goes out to the limbs. The thing is, they're not so great to try and work with in the spring. They're generally always damp. The thing with hardwood is it generally burns a little cleaner. You get nice hot coals with it. With dry wood, less smoke and less sparks. Problem is, it has to be dry to burn. You know what I mean? You can't grab a fresh piece of maple and expect it to burn that well. It'll kind of smolder over your coals. You can actually watch the sap or water from inside the tree boil out the ends of it, even if it's been drying for some amount of time.
Yeah. Maple's a really good one to find standing dead. Even then, though, you have to be careful. Like you said, it still tends to hold a fair bit of moisture, but you can, with a bit of skill and time, recognize a good standing dead maple. And I've had at least one trip where I found one that was probably 3 to 4 inches across, cut it down. It lasted me the entire night. All my fire came out of that one maple. And once I got it going, it made a really nice flame.
And I guess one of the key things to look for standing dead hardwood, or something I look for, is standing dead that's missing bark. Generally, if it's standing dead and missing bark, it's going to be a hardwood, and it's already to some level of dryness. Softwoods tend not to lose their bark, even once they die and they're standing for a long time. The bark tends to stay on them.
And you're also looking for a lot of the small branches to already be gone. So the standing dead, the main branches will still oftentimes stick around, but the small, thin runners, sticklers, whatever, the smallest ones, usually by then they've dried off and broken up in the wind and stuff, but you still just have like the main trunk and a few off branches. So if you look and you see a lot of small branches on it, it hasn't been dead that long. If it is dead, and if the bark is intact again, it's a good chance it's still living. It's just dormant in the winter. Winter is the hardest time to identify dead and live trees, but you still can definitely do it with time and skill. Take your time to learn about these trees, right?
For sure. So with both of these trees, softwoods and hardwoods, we've already kind of mentioned it, but we might as well say it directly, is the best wood is not always the stuff laying on the ground. Rarely is it the best stuff that's been laying on the ground. If it lays on the ground, it's like literally in contact with the ground. It's going to absorb a lot of the water and stuff from that and hold it inside the wood. As the wood dies, it turns punky. Which means it turns kind of spongy and it tends to pull water inside it again. Wood goes through this weird phase where it gets cut, dropped, broken off, whatever, dies. It dries out for a while, then it starts to rot, kind of, which turns to that punk, and then it starts reabsorbing water. And if it's on the ground, it's going to do that significantly faster. So I don't like looking directly on the ground for anything bigger than basically branches and stuff. You know what I mean? Like, my tinders and things like that, they'll fall on the ground. They generally don't stick around long enough to get to that rotting punky phase. They just dry out and then they just kind of disintegrate. But those are great to grab off the ground, providing they're dry. And a good way to check them is just break them. If you can take it and it breaks and it snaps cleanly, that's a pretty good dry piece of wood. If you go to bend it, if you go to break it and it just kind of bends around, probably still has a lot of the water and stuff in there. And that's true of almost any kind of wood when it's small. Hardwood, softwood, doesn't really matter.
Yeah, if you can mold it and shape it, then it's chances are it's not ready for firewood by any means. It has its other purposes. We could do a whole thing on that, what you can do with that type of wood. But fire is not really it, right? I don't know, Yudo. I do like to use damp firewood at the end of my fire. So if you're having a fire, it's late at night, you want the fire to last the night, I'll oftentimes take a few damp pieces and put on. Because what will happen is the fire will actually burn, dry that out, and then light it, and it'll burn for a while. You can oftentimes get like 2-3 hours out of a couple of decent-sized, round, damp logs. So there is a time and a place for non-seasoned wood.
Oh, yeah. And if it's not 100% dry, it doesn't mean you can't burn it. It just may not be the wood you throw directly on the fire to start your fire. Ben and I both have the habit that we'll get a bunch of our nice dry woods, get our fires going, and then anything that might be a little damp, we just kind of stack around the fire, and it dries out as the rest of it's burning, which is kind of good for people to remember, because far too often, once again, a mistake I see for the novice is they cut all their wood up and they just throw it to the side. You kind of got to sort it not only by its size, but by its dampness and the damper wood. Drag a little closer to the fire so the radiant heat has a chance to dry some of that out. So just one comment here. Comment. Terrascout Adventures. Did you say fat wood is usually found on damaged pine trees? That's where I typically find it, is if like a branch breaks off or a tree has been broken off or something like that, all the sap rushes to try and heal the tree. Even if it's been broken off around the base of it, the roots and stuff will plow all that sap and stuff back up to try and heal the tree, regardless if it can or can't. And that's where the resins and stuff are going to pool, and then the water kind of dries off and you're left with that just turpentine-y, smelly kind of... fat wood is what most people look for. You also get your pine pitch and stuff from those trees as well. To answer that. Sorry, go for it, Ben. Do you have something to add on that?
Couple other points. Oftentimes, where the knot or the branches leave the tree, that knotted area in the trunk, that'll oftentimes have a lot of sap in it. Naturally, especially shortly after it dies, that's where the sap seems to run into those knotted areas. And right down into the root area. So right around the ground length level, you can get it. Have you ever watched them make tar, pine tar?
Pine pitch, pine tar, yeah. You take like the tunk off, you boil it down, and it's actually pretty useful too, and that's something we can talk about in another episode, but the quick and dirty off it is just that. It's you boil down the pitch, and it can be used for a lot of stuff.
When I seen them do it, they made two things. They made the pine pitch and they made charcoal out of the same piece. And what they did is they took a root. So they cut the tree off, took the root section up, split it in the smallest pieces they could, threw it in a cast iron pot, lit a fire underneath it. And they had it so that all the fat or the resin forms in the bottom and pours out of a spigot. And then when they were finished with it, they opened up that pot and all the wood was left was charcoal. And they used that for stuff too, right?
And you know what? That might actually be something fun to try. No worries there, Terra Scout. Hopefully that answered some of your questions there. And like I said, that's for our area. I assume most pine trees are going to be the same though.
It definitely takes skill and practice to really get good at finding pine, fat wood. Once you start to find it, you'll kind of appreciate it and you'll know it because it has that much darker, damp look.
Yeah, it's almost like a reddish orange color. I thought I had a piece right here, but it must be out with my other stuff. It does stick out.
When you cut it, it actually will go pale for a second, and you can actually watch the moisture seep up out of it, and you'll get that strong smell almost instantly of like you said, like turpentine. And it almost has a waxy feel to it if you rub it a bit. Yeah.
So a wood that we haven't actually talked about yet, but we alluded to at the start of the episode... it's a wood that I like for making like kindling and stuff like that. If I can find it, it's relatively dry. And we mentioned it as trembling aspen or poplar. Or popple, yes. Or whatever you want to call it in this area. And it's a hardwood, 100% hardwood, but it's a softer hardwood. The wood itself is soft. And it burns really quickly, really brightly, just not a lot of heat to it.
So it is the most, this is what I said earlier, it is the most soft wood of the hardwoods.
Yeah.
In our, it has a lot of the functions, like I said, a softer wood, burns quick, It grows really quick. Like, it's one of the fastest growing trees in our area. And the beauty of it is what I think you're getting at is it often has a lot of dead branches and often has very big branches that you can cut off, you can harvest, and they're dry. They're very, very dry, and they're still stuck to the tree. Like, you can see it's like they lose all their bark and it just stands out there as this dead piece of perfectly good wood hanging off the tree.
And I think what it is where it's such a porous, soft wood, if it dies or gets damaged in any way, shape, or form, the moisture just gets zapped out of it. And I'm not basing this on anything other than a little bit of knowledge on trees and personal opinion, so please don't quote me on that. Well, you can quote me, but don't expect it to be 100% right.
It seems to be able to compartmentalize a branch.
Yeah.
And just cut it off from its system and allow it to die. And so I've often harvested those branches. They're very useful. But as a hardwood, it's a very brittle hardwood. So it'll shatter and snap and break relatively easy. So it's not great for some things, but for firewood, great starter firewood, awesome fire starter firewood. And a lot of trees have that property where it loses branches that are easily picked up. As you mentioned, small branches are what you will pick up off the ground. And oak tree is a big one for me. I had an oak tree in my yard, and it was always losing branches. Like, you could get a fair bit of firewood off one good oak tree if you just hang around it and check it into the area near it regularly. It's always losing branches, especially in the spring and fall. It seems to be its prime time to drop branches. And over the winter, so if you check in the spring, all the trees, the branches that fell off over the spring, the fall and the winter are there. And they're usually still pretty good for a while. They don't get too bad. So there must be other trees that do that. What would be your favorite trees for that?
I'm trying to think. I'm a big fan of popple for that reason there. Ash. If you can find an ash, like a standing dead ash, or an ash that's been dead or some leaves falling off it, those things are awesome to work with. They're generally super straight grain, easy to split. You can break them down small, fairly easy if you're batoning or with an axe or whatever. They're not super hard, like a rock maple or I guess more commonly called a sugar maple. They're easy to work with, and they're straight. Like, there's not a lot of branches, not a lot of knots through the whole thing. They're just not as common to find standing dead.
No. That's a tree I don't have a lot of familiarity with, but I spent a lot of time looking for them because they do have a lot of properties that people really like, and they make really good walking sticks and bows. People make bows and stuff out of it because they maintain a springiness even when they're dry. So they have a resilience to them that's hard to match. Maple's not too bad. Birch is not too bad. Oak is almost ridiculous for that. It's just too hard.
Yeah. Oak is a very hard wood. Burns good, but honestly, I think BTU-wise, you're probably going to get more heat out of a sugar maple or a yellow birch. Because where the oak is so dense, it just doesn't burn fast enough to give you a ton of heat. Great banking block, though.
Yeah.
So we talked a little bit about softwoods, hardwoods. The other thing I want to mention on popple or trembling aspen or whatever you want to call it, it's one of the few hardwoods that's in my area anyway, that's really good for making friction fire. It can be used very easily in a bow drill. I've even heard people have luck using a hand drill. Like an assisted hand drill, not just straight on with their hands, but if they put a piece of string over the top, that way they can get constant downward pressure, that they can actually get a pretty good ember going with that. Sam, I can't pronounce his last name, but you know who I mean.
Not Wenzel.
Who is it?
Wenzel?
Yep. So he's somebody I looked up to for friction fires starting off, and he exclusively used popple. Loved it. Absolutely loved it. When I was asking him about how I could improve some of my stuff, he was like, yeah, just go get popple. The bad thing about popple, a lot of smoke when you're using it, and it squeaks like a bugger. Yeah. But that's not bad. If you're cold, it doesn't matter either way.
That's actually one of my other favorite trees because popple grows so straight, and when it's young and it grows relatively fast, it has a lot of similarities to alder for that. In fact, when I was making quick hiking sticks and stuff, I'll keep an eye open for that because the sucker growth from that, like, it grows from its root, and so does alders. They're both spread easily by roots. So if you find one alder or popple in an area, and there's bound to be a lot of others, and they're all the same tree. Few people know that. So I think it's got to be one of the largest organisms in the world.
I was going to say, I know that you can get some massive tree, like whole forests growing out of one root system.
Yeah. We actually, when I worked as a tree trimmer years ago in Newfoundland, a guy actually came to us and said, can you clean up my yard? And we went back and there was like 500, and I kid you not, 500 individual looking trees that were all off one root system. And so we told the guy, like, we can cut every one of those down, and we gladly will. We'll come in with a brush saw and cut them all to the ground, and your yard will look great for a week. But next week, you come in, you'll have 3 feet of sucker growth coming off that bed. Unless you cut the roots out, you'll never get rid of it. And that's what he has to do. That's a very interesting tree. If you want to identify these, there's lots of good aids on the internet where you can get like the leaf shape. Because like the popple almost has, in my opinion, I would call it almost a heart shape with slightly serrated edges. And your alder, more of an oval shape with a point, you know. Maple, I think everyone knows. Oak is a lot more familiar. A lot of people would know oak.
Yeah, it's got the... Funny enough, I got an oak tree right there. I could have grabbed most of these leaves if I had a thought about it before we started the podcast. But
so hardwoods are a lot easier to identify by their leaf shape. I think it would be possible for the... someone to mix maybe.
I'm not leaving the office. I'm just walking over here. Chris asked a question, and I think I got the book literally sitting right here.
We lost him. He just left. We walked away. He's frustrated.
Bushcraft.
Look, you can get good visual aids where they'll show you the leaf, and they'll also oftentimes show you the buds or the leaf strip. So, like, alders, for instance, have two types of buds you'll see on them. A long, dangly one that has all the pollen in it, and then it's a tight green ball, usually in sets of four or five. Yeah, so you got a great book there, right?
Yeah, that was the comment. They were like, can you recommend any books? This is one I used starting off. I have several others, but this one was really nice. It's an older book now, but it gives you a lot of the identifications throughout the year, which we've mentioned in other podcasts that... don't just try to learn something at one time of the year. No. Everybody, like, I'm trying to think of one. Maple tree. A rock maple tree or sugar maple tree. That's the classic Canadian maple leaf with the 5 points. Real easy to identify in the summer when the leaf is out, but in the winter when all those leaves fall away, it's real easy to mix up a sugar maple with a white maple or a red maple. And I know red maple's not recognized everywhere in Canada. It's a branch of tiger maple. Anyway, without diving down a rabbit hole, when the leaves are off them, they're not so easy to distinguish. And that's why it's good to try and learn your trees and stuff like that throughout the year. Only pick a couple of them. And you've mentioned this before in past podcasts, Ben, and I've always taken this to heart because it was advice from you, is only take one or two and learn everything you can about them year round. And then once you got those down, then just take on one or two more. Don't try and take on 15, 20 trees. You'll just get yourself confused.
I was actually talking to a very knowledgeable acquaintance of mine, and they were talking about the fall and the leaf colors. So a lot of these leaves are actually based, like with the maples, the names, I believe, are actually based on the color they change in the fall. So red maples leaves almost always turn red. A yellow maple should turn more of a yellow.
Yep.
You know,
but for a red maple, for instance, over here, like I said, I know it's a subspecies. If you take your knife and you shave the first out layer off, like outer bark off, pith, I think it's called in between or whatever it is, it's actually reddish in color too. And that's one of the ways you can distinguish it during the winter when there is no leaves.
Yeah. So there's a ton of things you can learn about these things. And if you get one of these books, most times, they'll also tell you if there's any medicinal properties, if they're edible, can you gain... Because we're here to talk about firewood, but believe it or not, most trees actually can provide quite a bit of food if you know what to look for. And for example, I believe it's pine, you can actually... That pith, that white fleshy part, can actually be fried up.
Okay, funny story on this one, just because you mentioned it. Somebody once told me that if you peeled that out, and you're right, it's on pine or spruce, one of those two. If you peel that out nice and thin and you cook that over an open fire with a little salt, tastes just like bacon. You know what it doesn't taste anything like?
Bacon.
Nothing like bacon. Is it edible? Yeah, you can choke it down. If I was starving, I'd eat it, but it's not something I'd go back for seconds for if I didn't have to absolutely eat it.
It was actually a starvation food for a lot of the natives in North America. It was a known food that they could eat in times of poor health, poor hunting, and it was actually, I believe, to some groups, it was actually used as an insult. So if there was two tribes that weren't getting along over it, they might refer to the other tribe as a bark eater, because they didn't have the hunting skills and gathering skills to gather good food, so they were forced to eat bark. So it's not the prime food to eat. That being said, it's a nutritious food that can get you through a very bad time. So it's a great skill to know. Agreed. Many things that people will say taste just like bacon, they're setting you up for disappointment. Nothing tastes just like bacon except
bacon.
Bacon. Everything else may taste awesome even. Don't tell me it tastes like bacon. Then I'm going to argue with you. You've just ruined it. Right?
If anybody bacon, does want to try probably. And eat that stuff, boil it first to soften it up. It actually does improve the flavor. Well, not flavor, it improves the texture. Boil it, then roast it. Otherwise, it's literally like chewing on sawdust.
I've tried it raw. It's a very strong, stringent, pungent taste.
It's bitter. It's not quite... Anyway, completely different topic. But yeah, it's kind of bitter, dry.
And it's hard to get out of your mouth. It lasts. That taste does not go away.
Easily. It's like tannin. If you get if you drink water that has a lot of tannin in it, it's like that taste just really amplified, which I guess makes sense because you're basically going right to the source.
Yeah, like times 100.
So, circling back to the book that I'm holding here for any of our audio listeners, because I forgot we are a podcast. the one I'm holding in my hand for here, it's just Native Trees of Canada by R.C. Hosey. And this is an older book now. Don't get me wrong. I think this was published in the 80s. I latched onto it in the 90s when I was helping my dad doing scaling. 1989, 86. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It's a good book. The point is you can probably find a tree identification or a native trees off your area. You know what I mean? There is a lot of provincial specific books here in Canada. There's a lot of state specific books in the States. There's a lot of place specific books out there. And I highly encourage anybody that wants to learn the trees in their area to look for a book that's written for their area. Like, this is my Native Trees of Canada. I have a Native Trees of Nova Scotia as well, which gives me a lot more in-depth information about the trees that I would find here. I liked this one because at the time I was traveling around Canada and I was trying to, you know, pick out some of the trees I wasn't familiar with. But I started out learning the ones here in Nova Scotia.
Yeah. And I mean, neither one of us would claim to be an expert even on trees in Nova Scotia, although we would consider ourselves relatively competent. As we get out of our home areas, we often come across trees that don't look or act the way we expect them to, and then we start looking into it, and it's kind of interesting what you can find out. Trees are an amazing thing, and fire is one of the aspects you can get out of it. But it's one of the important things. It's a very important survival skill to be able to light a fire, and to be able to light a fire and to be able to identify the trees that are going to give you the best chance at fire and the best results. So cooking over hardwood, generally much better than cooking over softwood. In fact, it's actually considered slightly safer, I believe.
Yeah. But once again, there's less...
sap.
Less embers and sap and popping and stuff spraying at you. Less smoke with hardwoods, generally when they're drier. If they're wet, they smoke like a bugger, don't get me wrong. But dry hardwoods generally have a lot less smoke because they burn a lot hotter and they produce nice coals to cook on.
But you don't smoke generally with a softwood.
No.
Smoking of food is almost always done with a hardwood. And if you are using a softwood involved in it, it's oftentimes the branches to create a barrier from to keep the smoke in, but not so much to produce the smoke. Just keep that in mind. We do seem to remember that some of the extra smoke that comes off of it can contain things that are less helpful and may even be slightly carcinogenic. So just keep that in mind when you're creating it.
But a good thing to know about softwoods, if you need to create a lot of smoke real fast, once again, survival situation, something like that, grab yourself a couple softwood branches, fire it on top of a hot fire. You're going to get a ton of smoke real fast. And the benefit is it's probably not going to put your fire out.
No, and if it's slightly dry, it's like throwing gasoline on.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Try to keep this in perspective. Don't fire this massive mound on when you're tucked under a whole bunch of little trees, because you may end up creating a way bigger problem for yourself.
If you find like some dead evergreen branches and you say, oh, I'll just toss those on the fire, do know that not only will they probably ignite easily and readily, they will actually produce a ridiculous amount of heat in an even more ridiculously short period of time. And I have seen people singe their eyebrows just by tossing a few branches onto a fire. So, you know, it's a lot of fun. Just take care. Like, be careful of it. So next, we really should, and you know, we've killed 50 minutes. And,
yeah, I was going to say, I was just looking at my list.
Prepping the wood. We've always said this, and I'm going to try and speed through this, and then Robert's going to add on to it, I'm sure. The starter fire, you do need to make it small as possible. What we're thinking here is more surface area to less mass. So you don't want big, dense things. You want small, thin areas. So splitting it down to small bits makes a lot more surface area per mass. That gives a lot more area for the flame to sort of, you know, the wood to gasify. The gasification is what creates the flame. What your flame is your hot gas is releasing energy. So you need to get that gases out. The more surface area you have to less mass, better it lights. So small, thin things like straw, like really thin things, helps best. And then you work your way up. Bigger wood takes longer to burn. So bark, the outer layer, round, is the hardest to burn by far.
Generally, so that's where most of your moisture is kept.
At the very least, most wood, when you're starting, needs to be at least cut in half, if not quartered. And that's what's going to get you the better fire with it. You said keep it dry. If you are storing it for any length of time, we've mentioned this even in the last month or two, store it in a crook of a tree up off the ground. And if you can, cover it with something to keep the moisture from sitting on it. Small tarp, piece of plastic, a few boughs laid the correct way will actually shed most of the moisture and not allow it to sit on it. And make sure that it has airflow. If you keep it in a small area where the air can't get around it, it won't dry and it'll actually just sort of mold. And it won't be very good. So again, by putting it in the crook of the tree and stacking it the right way so air can go through it, even the direction you face, if the prevailing wind is sort of going through it, it dries a lot quicker than if it just kind of goes across it.
A couple things I can add into that, as you said. I'm going to give you a couple keys to creating a decent fire. As Ben said, dry, start small, work big. Never try and start a fire on a damp surface. If you're like in the snow or it's a boggy area or something like that, build a platform, build your fire on top of that. So platform could just be a couple big round sticks laid down and build your fire on that. Split a couple in half. Just get yourself away from that dampness, because that's going to literally pull the heat out of your fire and it's going to evaporate that water and it's going to come up. And water expands like 100 times. One drop will fill the same space over 100. Anyway, water vaporizing expands and takes a lot of heat with it is the key point. So never build on a damp surface. When you're adding wood to your fire, never add more wood than your flames can reach over. So if your flames are like this high, don't stack your wood up to this high, because you're probably going to suffer it out. The flames should always be a couple inches over the tallest piece of wood in your fire for an effective lighting. Once you get a bunch of coals and things like that, and you get a good bed of coals, you know, the fire's established, that rule changes a little bit. But when you're building the fire in its incipient stage, you need it to have those flames over, because otherwise you are, it just can't pull the air in. It won't build the fire the way it should.
Yeah. So I'm just trying to remember. So you said you need a base that's to keep the moisture off the ground, from the ground to the fire. So you can leave those relatively big. Have you practiced using the fire down method, where you start at the top with the smallest mints?
Top burning fire,
yeah.
Yep, and that's a good way to do it. And if anybody doesn't know what that is, or upside down fire, reverse fire, however you want to call this, you basically build a big base at the bottom. That's all your bigger woods, and then you kind of come up making a cone to all your smaller woods. And the idea is you ignite the top, it kind of burns down into the next one, and it makes a real good bed of coals pretty quickly. It has its time and place, trust me. It's great. The only problem is your wood generally has to be really dry to do something like that. Because the other way, building a traditional fire, you start small, work big, you have that convection column of heat and the radiant heat and even the conducting heat that's going to help dry everything out and make it burn a little bit more readily. Problem is, a lot more of it does kind of go up in smoke, so to say. You don't really get a lot of coals when it's burning that way, because it's a more complete combustion and it's pulling everything away with it as it goes. The upside down fire has always been a good classic one for cooking, because you build it, you walk away. Once it burns down, you got this massive pile of coals. You can throw your pan or pot on it and away you go. Are the gears turning there, Ben? Or...
yeah. I haven't done a lot of that one. I mean, we've talked before, within the last 6 months or so, of our favorite fire starting methods. And for me, like, the log cabin was one of my favorite, and the teepee. Those are two really standard ones. I don't think we've really got into in this time, and I think we should bring it up. Fire starter that grows with the tree. So spruce has the old man's beard, which is somewhat usable if it's dry enough. Birch tree is, I think, everyone's go-to. If you can get the bark off a birch tree, it's the easiest.
The birch bark will burn even wet. It has oils and stuff in it. Amazing tinder.
Yeah, you can literally walk to the lake, put it in, take it off, just flick it off, get most of the moisture off, light it up in a light, and it. At most, it'll burn with a black smoke at that point, but and when it's dry, it burns with almost a gray or white smoke. But yeah, no, birch bark is probably one of the best. There's a lot of fungi, a horseshoe.
I'm a fun guy. Oh, that was a terrible joke, wasn't it?
I quit.
Wow.
That's all it took, right? Horseshoe, was it horseshoe fungus and chaga?
Yep.
Turkey
tail is another one that can be pretty good. Chaga is technically a fungus if you can get it dry.
Yeah. So those are some that you can keep an eye out for. What else? Spruce, you get the old man's beard, but also spruce, lower branches are almost always dead and very dry. One of my favorite to get small kindling.
Pine cones.
Pine
cones,
yes.
Amazing fire starters.
Especially if you get them at the right time, when they're dry but still like sticky. If that
makes
sense.
That makes sense. Late fall.
Yeah, when they're really green, good luck. When there's a spot where they're almost too dry and like all the resin that's in them is gone, they'll still burn. But when they get the right amount of resin, they'll actually burn like a candle. Like really, really easy to light up. Different types of the evergreens, if you can find like the red, when they've turned red, the needles.
Yep. The needles themselves will dry and become flamball that's left there. There is some residue resin in them.
That is one of the most flammable things I've ever met. If you can hit it with a flame, it's going to ignite and it'll create a ton of heat. That's sort of what we mentioned. We call them growing up blasty boughs, and they will put a lot of flankers. Some people would call them sparks. They'd be wrong. They're flankers. It's the newbie coming out of the ring. Yeah, so things like that. Just look for the good tinder. and you'll find it. Other barks definitely can be used. Just make sure they're drying.
One we haven't touched that's real common, a lot of bushcrafters love it, is cedar. Reason I haven't touched it, cedar's not native to Nova Scotia. Well, it is and it isn't. We it's do rare. Have them here, but it is so rare. I think I've seen 2 cedar trees in my life in the wild here. Not to be confused with cedar bushes.
So yeah, its bark, I believe, can kind of like a form like a fibrous mass.
Yeah, you can kind of peel it with the spine of your knife, and it's fibrous.
Yeah, so it's very useful. So yeah, so I mean, with a bit of experience, a bit of knowledge, a bit of practice, you can get a ton of stuff out of most trees and definitely form a good fire. And it does come with practice and experience. The more time you get out there and looking at the trees and seeing how they act and behave, it's easier to tell if they're dry enough, if they're ripe for good fires. Every time you go to different woods, you're going to notice a different, like, a treescape. That's my word for the day, treescape.
Treescape. So
you're going to either have evergreen, like, you know, your softwood forest, your hardwood forest, or a mixed forest. To me, the most ideal would be a mixed forest. That's a very healthy forest. Any forest that's all one type of tree or monoculture, your lumberjacks might tell you differently, but it's not considered a healthy forest. In fact, a lot of people would say it's a dead forest. So insects, animals, and stuff, they need that variety. So a more variety forest is the most healthy forest. And you'll find more animals, more insects, more options. But here's the thing. You'll find more fire options. You'll find more food options. So that's what you're really looking for. The ideal forest is a mixed forest. And you're going to get a lot of options. But even then, terrain is going to make a big difference. As you go down into the valleys and boggy area, you're going to find certain types of trees. As you get up in the higher, drier area, you're going to find different types of trees. So plan when you go to sort of know about those things, right?
Something just kind of my last 2 cents on the whole thing here is anybody in the Atlantic provinces that just survived Hurricane Fiona, but this time next year, you're going to have more firewood than you know what to do with in the woods. Year after that, it's probably going to start getting a little punky. So if you've been waiting and wondering when to go camping, next year is going to be the ideal year because you're going to have tons of firewood flopping around. Much like when Hurricane Juan went through, the year after, the second year after, those are your best burning years. Anytime after that, it's going to start turning punky and absorbing a lot of water. Not that you're not going to find a ton of firewood from it. It's just not going to be as readily available, if that makes any sense.
In fact, even up until this year, you could still get wood from Juan if you knew what you were looking for.
Oh, yes, quite easily. Anything that was still hanging up, it was good to go.
Yeah, and there was a lot of it. I often found wood that you could pretty well guarantee from the looks of it was there for a long time, and my assumption for a lot of it was still one blowover, stuff that, like you said, got tangled up, got hooked up in trees that just sort of stayed there and dried for years. And some of the forests that were damaged with one were vast, and the forests that were damaged with Fiona, same idea.
Like, yeah. There's a lot of destruction out there from the hurricane, but I mean, it's one of those things. It is a cycle of nature. I understand there has to be destruction for regrowth. The downside of all of this, well, the good sides, you're going to have firewood. The downside is please be very careful making fires in the woods for the next couple of years. If it gets out of control, it is very easy to have another Spry Field Porter's Lake fire event. Where it's thousands upon thousands of acres that'll be burnt. This is not so uncommon towards like Ontario, where you have like the big boreal forests. Here in Nova Scotia, we don't got that kind of forest. So when it burns and rips through a couple thousand hectare off it, that's a massive swath of forest that just disappeared from Nova Scotia.
So in the meantime, not only will you find good firewood, you also potentially find a lot more fungus if you're into gathering, you know, foraging for funguses and stuff. You'll be able to find a lot more options and varieties over the next few years. So you have different dying and decaying woods that'll be sitting in different areas. Also, there's the huge risk of still hanging trees and trees that are not as stable. So be really careful. Be really careful of widowmakers and other things that, you know, it only takes the right breeze in the right direction that quite a bit more forest can come down on top of you. So be really careful where you chose your campsites and stuff. And if you have to enter areas that aren't safe, enter as quick and leave as quick as possible. Don't dabble in areas that are dangerous, especially if there's a breeze or windy conditions.
And just be careful walking through the woods from now up until some of this gets cleaned up. I mean, I was just going checking on a property that I have down in the country, and I was just walking from the end of my driveway into where it was, maybe 150 feet, and it wasn't long, and I was 15 feet in the air and didn't know it. Just walking up trees, you know, taking the easiest path. Thought I was just walking along them, but ever so slightly going up with every step, and all of a sudden you're like, holy crap, I'm in the air. Real easy to do when you're in the woods. And if you slip, you may think, oh, you know, it's only a foot or two to the ground. And then all of a sudden you realize you go through like 10 feet of limbs and then suddenly hit the ground. High risk there of being hurt. Nothing to be scared of, but definitely be aware of.
And honestly, you might be better off if you do hit the ground, because in some of those big blown down areas, if you end up halfway down, you're sort of stuck in the middle of it.
Yeah.
So be very careful. So I think we covered a lot of stuff. I think we could actually go much longer, but we have exceeded our hour.
And I apologize now if it seemed a little scattered to some of you folks out there. It is a ton of information, and we were trying to keep it to the most concise and meaningful bits of information, even though we have a tendency to dive down rabbit holes. I think we kept it on topic pretty good tonight.
We did. There's a lot of information in here, and admittedly, we're not, you know, experts on it, but we are here to share what we do know, and sort of give you good practices, because I think these skills really get best by practicing these skills and getting out there and knowing how to practice them. So we've given you a basis for you to develop your skills and knowledge. Now it's up to you to get out there and actually put some of this to work. Get yourself a good field guide. Hang out with people who are very knowledgeable. Practice with different woods and see how they react when you're lighting fires and stuff, and you'll learn what you really like and what really works. And I'll say this, what works for one person, you'd think, you know, it's a science, it's going to work for everyone. It's sort of like friction fire. Different people have better luck with different types of wood and stuff. And I think some of it has to do with just finding what works for you and what you're able to find. Because, you know, maybe they found a drier piece of poplar, or maybe they found a drier piece of popple or something, you know, or the conditions were just better in this particular area, right?
So, and you just learn to work with what's around you. Lots of people say, oh, yeah, go get, cedar, great fire starter. If you don't got it, you're never going to learn how to use it, right?
Yeah, and if you expect to go out and find one particular tree type, because that's what you know and depend on, I remember one time someone said they use balsam fir to help with a wound. So if you cut yourself, balsam fir has the balls of sap that you can sort of like press in on. But if you cut yourself, you can actually close a wound with that stuff. It works really well. It's sort of really sticky. It's almost like the crazy glue of the woods. And I caught myself one time. I was like, that's what I'll use. I'll just go in it. And you know what? There wasn't a balsam fir for like a mile. I checked like everything, and there was none in that area. So I happened to be in a forest where there was a lot of pine and some spruce and lots of maples and birch, but there was no balsam fir. So if you expect to find something, it's not always there. But if you get to know a bunch of trees, you can usually find something that does a similar job. So just throwing that out there, I guess.
No, and once again, so much information that could be passed along on this topic, but like Ben said, we've kind of hit our hour, trying real hard to keep our shows to about that. So like Ben said, good time for us to say goodnight tonight. If anybody has questions, feel free to ask. Like there's so much more we could have put into this, but it would have, you know, it does kind of get boring because there's so many minute differences, but they're all important. So if you do got questions, we will try to help, but we're not experts. We know enough to be dangerous.
Send your questions to Robert and he'll do his best.
See you next week, folks. Have a good night.
Night off.